The leader of the Islamic Revolution has called for an alliance among countries sanctioned by the U.S. to defeat the coercive ploy. President Xi says China must modernize its military to make it into a great wall of steel that would ensure the country's security. And President Biden says U.S. banking system is safe. This after two American banks collapse in days, worrying everyone, especially tech and healthcare corporations. Hello and welcome to the World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us right here to Iran, where the leader of the Islamic Revolution has called for an alliance among countries sanctioned by the U.S. to defeat the coercive ploy. Well, the leader says if the countries that have been sanctioned by the U.S. tap into each other's capacities, they will all reap the benefits. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks in a meeting with visiting Belarusian president. The leader said tough sanctions turned Iran's attention inward and paved the way for great progress for the country. The leader also called for drastic expansion of ties between Tehran and Minsk, saying the two sides have the will and the spirit to implement bilateral agreements. For his part, Alexander Lukashenko said his visit is aimed at opening a new chapter in bilateral ties and witnessing firsthand Iran's achievements despite years of sanctions. Well, President Ebrahim Raisi says U.S. sanctions have failed to stop Iran's progress and even turned out to be a blessing in disguise. Ebrahim Raisi was speaking alongside the visiting Belarusian president in Tehran.
Despite the threats and sanctions, the Islamic Republic of Iran has made huge strides and turned sanctions into opportunities. We are ready to share our experiences with our friend country, Belarus.
Raisi said Iran and Belarus are both opposed to unilateralism, adding that independent countries can advance and neutralize sanctions through cooperation and exchange of capacities. The two sides have held fruitful talks and reached agreements in various sectors such as trade, industry, agriculture, mines, and transportation. The president expressed hope that the visit by the Belarusian president would become a turning point in bilateral relations. Alexander Lukashenko also testified to Iran's resilience in the face of sanctions and threats.
I was last in Tehran 17 years ago for an official visit. I have to acknowledge that no threats or pressure have succeeded in stopping Iran's progress, and the reality is that sovereign and strong Iran is continuing down the path.
Lukashenko, whose country is also under U.S. sanctions, said Iran and Belarus should not miss the current opportunity provided by the sanctions. He said the two countries share a similar stance on regional and international issues and want a just and multipolar world. Lukashenko added that bilateral trade volume has tripled in 2022 compared to the year before, but this is nowhere near expectations. The Belarusian president stressed that Tehran and Minsk can achieve their goal of increasing the trade volume to $100 million if they implement all the agreements signed during the visit. The breaking news is reiterating again what Ayatollah Khamenei had said about the ties between Belarus and Iran, and said that basically the severe sanctions on Iran has made Iran go within and to actually increase its effort and to be effective. And he said that these two countries and other countries, especially that are sanctioned, should help each other and actually break this sanction regime. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign ministry says the agreement on the restoration of ties between Iran and Saudi Arabia can help boost regional cooperation on peace and stability.
This deal has favorable effects on cooperation and convergence in the region to help shore up peace and stability, particularly in the strategic Persian Gulf region.
The spokesman said the agreement was the outcome of a year and a half of diplomatic efforts. He hailed China's positive role in facilitating the agreement, saying this demonstrated China's potential for peace-building efforts in the region, which benefits the entire community. Kanani said preparations are being made for a meeting between the two countries' foreign ministers in the near future. He said there is potential for similar deals between Iran and other regional countries, including Jordan and Bahrain. Kanani added that Iran is ready for a prisoner swap with the United States on humanitarian grounds.
As we earlier announced, we are ready to do this as a humanitarian issue. In this case, if the U.S. treats the case realistically, the prisoner swap can go ahead as a solely humanitarian issue.
Well, the spokesman said the exchange was agreed upon as part of a deal Iran and the U.S. signed last March. He added that the swap was put on hold after the U.S. tied the issue to negotiations for the revival of the nuclear deal. On Sunday, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian announced a prisoner exchange agreement between Tehran and Washington. He said the exchange can happen soon if the U.S. makes its last technical arrangements. But later, a White House spokesman dismissed as false the Iranian minister's announcement of the deal. The Secretary of Iran's Drug Control Headquarters has criticized the UN and the international community for their politically motivated and selective approaches regarding drug trafficking. Iskandar Momeni described the sanctions imposed on Iran by some Western states as obstacles impeding anti-drug operations. Momeni also highlighted the necessity of offering assistance to neighboring countries impacted by drug smuggling from Afghanistan. He also called on the international community and relevant UN agencies to help countries involved in combating drug trafficking. Momeni made the remarks in an address to the 66th session of the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna. Moving on to other news this hour, the IRIB World Service News Awards for TV, radio, and social media productions has praised its flagship news channels in Arabic, English, and Spanish for offering a new perspective to their audience worldwide in a world where mainstream media sets the narrative. Gisu Misha Ahmadi reports.
Creating a world where untold stories are told and unheard voices are heard. The annual IRIB World Service News Awards, dubbed SOAP Media Festival, this year had a lot to celebrate.
It's been a few years that the dynamics are changing and the new world order is emerging. The unipolar world is now turning into a multipolar world. Iran is in a position where it can speed up this process and offer a third viewpoint different from the two narratives that have always existed.
Words that clarify the mission of IRIB World Service. And this is exactly why the Arabic news channel Al Alam swept the IRIB World Service News Awards, taking home wins in nearly every major category, with its sister channel Al Alam Syria TV maintaining frontrunner status with its popular talk show Zoom Room.
We are proud to be able to gain a strong foothold in Syria and West Asia in particular by shedding light on the truth and covering stories that are untold about people who have been misrepresented.
I've been with Al Alam for more than 8 years now. I have hosted many TV programs. It's great to be part of a team where the goal is to bring truth to light.
Meanwhile, the Spanish-language news channel Hispan TV, as well as Press TV, were seen as the gold standard of achievement in the television community, winning awards in different sections, including the Best Documentary and the Best News Website. Not to mention that Press TV's Palestine Declassified won the Best Political TV Show.
This is the moment we're in. We're in the end, the dying throes of U.S. hegemony. And as he was saying, I very much agree with, the cultural infrastructure for the ending of hegemony has to be put in place, and that involves media, including news and journalism, which can give a different view of how the world is operating and tell more of the truth about the world. So, you know, the media play a central, important role in all that.
Press TV correspondent Johnny Miller, who has covered the most difficult news stories, including the Rohingya crisis and the developments in Ukraine over the past year, was not left out.
I think two of my heroes, Noam Chomsky and John Pilger, said that there's They've never seen as much propaganda in the war in Ukraine than in any war that they've reported on or written about. And they've reported right back from Vietnam. So that's telling you a lot. And there's a huge amount of propaganda on Ukraine. Indeed, Ukraine is it's a civil war, but it's also a proxy war between Russia and NATO. And I think we're seeing the beginning of this split between the West and the East, China, Russia, Iran, and we're seeing a challenge to American hegemony and indeed the creation of this new multipolar world.
And according to the head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB World Service is at the forefront of this propaganda war.
In this unequal war, where IRIB World Service has none of the advantages of mainstream media, from state-of-the-art technology to political support, it has been able to blaze a new trail. The fact that its news channels are frequently banned on different social media platforms is testimony to that. Meanwhile, this also proves in practice that the free flow of information and free speech are nothing more than slogans that are used as political tools by advocates of democracy.
Media play a key role in today's world. They can set the tone for diplomatic endeavors, and they are a tool of international communication. Particularly for the Islamic Republic of Iran, its media outlet can pave the way for diplomacy.
That is why there are great expectations, which means that so far, IRIB World Service has been able to deliver on its responsibilities.
In a world where mainstream media is setting the narrative, IRIB World Service has been able to break the monopoly and offer a new perspective. Gizumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Palestinians in Gaza have held a rally to mark the Palestinian Wounded Persons Day. They paid homage to tens of thousands of Palestinians injured by Israeli attacks. Ashraf Shannon brings us more.
People in the Gaza Strip rallied in front of the Red Cross office on Monday to mark this year's Palestinian Wounded Persons Day. The annual event pays tribute to Palestinians who have got injured during Israeli wars and aggressions. Thousands of injured Palestinians suffer from permanent disabilities caused by Israel. Wounded Palestinians say Israel's crimes will continue to go unpunished as long as the regime is under the protection of Western countries.
Our injuries always remind us of the criminal Zionist enemy who left us scarred for life. The Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people started in 1948 and continue to take place until this day. The world, especially the Western countries, must stop assisting the Israeli regime.
During the 2014 war on Gaza, Israeli forces killed over 2,200 Gazans, including women and children, and injured more than 11,000. In May of 2021, over 2,200 Palestinians were injured, including 685 children and 480 women. The wounded people in Gaza are also suffering from the Israeli blockade, which has created a harsh humanitarian situation in the region.
Gaza Strip, during the last years, witnessed different escalation, which caused so many wounded people who are suffering due to their injuries, severe injuries, and in the same time, the socioeconomic conditions due to the blockade.
Wounded Palestinians in the blockaded territory struggled to cope with their injuries due to a lack of specialized medical facilities to cater for their needs.
We are calling on the international community in order to exert pressure on Israel, first, to stop its offensive on the Palestinian people, and also to end this illegal blockade, to let in the medical instruments and equipments and medicine to Gaza Strip in order to help these people who are in bad need for surgeries and medical treatments.
Medics say Israel's use of unconventional weapons during its wars and aggressions has increased the number of severe injuries among Palestinians.
Israeli regime forces have killed and maimed thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, including women and children, since 2008. Experts say the international community must end its apathy to Israeli crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Now to China, where the president there calls for the modernization of the country's military to make it, quote, a great wall of steel. Xi Jinping made the call in his first speech as head of state in his third term as president. And amid heightened tensions with the U.S., Xi said security is the foundation for development. He also reiterated China's opposition to secessionist activities and external interference in Taiwan. Beijing and Washington have seen tensions soar over a number of issues, including the status of Taiwan and the U.S. crackdown on Chinese tech companies. China has openly warned the U.S. that it is ready to use its military to defend its interests. And to the U.S. now, where President Joe Biden says his country's banking system is safe in the wake of a sudden collapse of two American banks, which has sparked fears of contagion in the financial sector.
Americans can rest assured that our banking system is safe. Your deposits are safe. Let me also assure you, we will not stop at this. We'll do whatever is needed.
Biden also pledged stiffer bank regulations, forcing regulators to step in with a series of emergency measures. The collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank on Friday was followed by the shutdown of Signature Bank in New York on Sunday, prompting a plunge in U.S. bank shares. Now, concerns are growing that it would affect a large number of American technology and healthcare companies, as well as startups, if they cannot access their money. The losses have also reached major lenders in Asia, with HSBC, National Australia Bank, and Mitsubishi UFJ bearing the brunt. Now, the equity markets are also impacted. Tokyo's stock exchange was down more than 1% on Monday, as indices also slid in other major markets. Well, the BBC has been forced to reinstate its highest-paid presenter, Gary Lineker, after some of his colleagues refused to work in a show of solidarity with the veteran football presenter. BBC Director General Tim Davies says that Lineker's suspension was appropriate and that the presenter has agreed to stick to the current editorial guidelines until a new policy is formed. The corporation axed much of its sports coverage over the weekend after presenters, pundits, and commentators refused to work. Lineker's suspension led to accusations from staff, opposition, politicians, and commentators that the BBC had bowed to pressure from the government, despite the corporation's claim of being politically neutral. Well, the Match of the Day host was taken off air over his criticism of the UK government's refugee policies. The former England captain, who previously hosted refugees in his own home, had tweeted to a video posted by the British Home Office announcing the government's Stop the Boats policy. He accused the government of using Nazi-era rhetoric and called the move beyond awful. And now to England, where junior doctors in Britain rally as they begin a three-day strike to protest low payments. The British Medical Association has slammed the wages, saying newly qualified doctors can earn more serving coffee. Now, the union added that the specialists who represent almost half of England's medical workforce are being paid 26% less compared to 2008. Now, the strike is the latest involving NHS staff. Back-to-back walkouts have been staged by nurses, paramedics, and other health workers over the past months. They also want payments that better reflect the double-digit levels of inflation. This is part of the broader wave of strikes in Britain by hundreds of thousands of public sector workers. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
History of knowledge in Iran. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are with you with the fourth episode of the series in which we make you familiar with a few Iranian scientists to whom mankind is indebted in various fields of sciences. If you remember, we talked briefly on Abu Musa Khwarazmi, the great mathematician who was also outstanding in astronomy and has rendered great services to both fields. Today, we will continue discussing math and getting familiar with another Iranian genius in the field, namely Abu Reyhan Biruni. Stay tuned, please. Math is considered an applicable science in the broad region of the Islamic Iranian civilization. In view of this, many discoveries have taken place in this land in various branches of math. All these occurred while a dark era of ignorance and enmity with knowledge was dominant in most parts of the world. Turkish historian and author Halil İnalcık explains the conditions in those days. What shaped the Islamic civilization was production of knowledge based on Islamic thought, theosophy and philosophy, which took place through the Islamic Iranian culture in the 4th century AH. In that era, Europe was in ignorance. A synthesis of the Iranian and Islamic cultures was formed during the first era of the Islamic civilization. Iranian researcher Dr. Musa Najafi also says, the 4th and 5th centuries were the era of climax of the Islamic civilization. In the next eras, too, the Islamic civilization was in its zenith. For example, the 9th century AH was the period of the rule of Safavids in Iran. But the Islamic civilization, in its climax, delivered great figures to the human civilization, such as Ibn Sina, Abu Reyhan Biruni, Farabi, Khaja Nizam al-Mulk Tusi, and many other thinkers. In the first period of thriving the Islamic civilization, there were many narrators and scholars of hadith and thinkers, mainly helped this civilization flourish in philosophy and the common sciences of their age. Yet, in the next periods, indexes changed and most of them tilted towards mystics, art, and architecture. Turkish researcher of Islamic sciences, Dr. Fuat Sezgin says, I'd like to show you a device whose name has not been registered in the history of math. It is Abu Reyhan Biruni who introduces this device to us. This device is used for drawing circle on the pattern of planet Earth. If you don't have such a device, you won't be able to draw an accurate circle on planet Earth. This is among the devices which were mentioned in Abu Reyhan Biruni's book. The name of the device can be translated as interconnected two-sided ruler. You put the circle or page between the two rulers and draw your desired line or shape on both sides. This device had remained unknown in the history of math till 19th century. Who is Abu Rehan Biruni? Abu Rehan Mohammad ibn Ahmad Biruni was the prominent Iranian scientist of the second half of the 4th century and early 5th century AH. He has elaborately written innumerable books in math, astronomy, pharmaceuticals, and geography. Biruni is among the geniuses whose scientific figure was revealed to the world through the progress of sciences. He was a master of most natural sciences of his time and was among the first persons who embarked on finding a special weight of many objects. His findings were so precise that his calculations have very little difference with what recent scholars have found with modern equipment. Abu Rehan would travel to different regions and measure the longitude and latitude of those regions and would determine the location of every city on a globe. Years later, he successfully drew those regions on a flat map. This was, in fact, the prelude to cartography as a subcategory of geography. Biruni managed to calculate the most accurate length of the Earth in his time and raised the likelihood of the Earth's rotation around itself. This Iranian genius spent long periods of his life in India. He studied the history, beliefs, customs, and philosophy of Indians. The Indian scholars would not welcome him at first, but very soon he drew their trust and was invited to various circles and gatherings to show a part of the Iranian culture and civilization on one hand, and study their customs and past record more deeply. These studies resulted in writing the book Tahqiq Mal al-Hind, or Research on India. After over 1,000 years, this book has been the best reference for research on India. Abu Rehan Biruni, in an essay, studies the precedence of finding the important theorem of sines and tangents by Iranian scientists and examines the share of each of them. Biruni's studies are very useful for the students who want to be top scholars in geometry. His explanations on various geometrical and mathematical concepts are different from those of Euclid. He tries to give more tangible definitions of concepts. Biruni has explained the rule for ascending of foundations and springs in a scientific language. Then he speaks about the running of water from the depth of wells and springs. A brief look at Biruni's works indicates that he was one of the most prolific writers of the Islamic era. If we judge him according to his works, we should say that he has spent a lot of time on each of these works and written them with profound research. That's why he describes his love of his works to the love of people toward their children. Abu Rehan Biruni has presented a list of his works, according to which he has completed 103 works, left 10 works unfinished, and authored 25 works in collaboration with other writers. The Iranian genius used to call himself as a servant of knowledge. He would say, "I thank God for being able to be at the service of knowledge since childhood." A scholar by the name of Abul Hasan Ali ibn Isa writes, "When Abu Rehan was at his deathbed, I went to visit him. He asked me a jurisprudential issue. I told him that it was not a proper time to ask such a question. He said, 'Which one is better, to know this and die or die without knowing it?' I told him the answer and left him. A few steps away, I heard the sound of mourning and crying from Abu Rehan's house." This event has been narrated in historical books on the last moments of Biruni's life. He passed away in 440 AH, 1049 AD, in the city of Ghaznain.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Some of our ulama explained it very beautifully when they say that Tawbah is a reflection of Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. This ayat is not only for death. At every moment, whenever we commit sins, we have moved away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And when we come to realization, that's where we have to say, Inna lillah, we belong to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Then now I'm returning, not through death. By doing tawbah, now I'm returning to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Basically, the return to Allah is of two types. One is inevitable. Mort, death. Every human being will be returned to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whether they like it or not. As I many times say, you don't have to buy the tickets, already prepaid. You don't have to worry about which day or timing, it's not your choice anyway. You know, everything, that return to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in form of death is inevitable. But there is another return which can happen multiple times in our life, and that is the return to Allah by choice. And that is not by death, but by tawbah. Whenever we move away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, regret that sincerely, then we want to go back. And that is why the famous hadith of the Prophet where he says, Mutu qabla an tamutu. The literal meaning of this hadith is that die before you die. What does it mean? Is the Prophet saying that you commit suicide? No, here the Prophet used same terminology. He says, Mutu, die. Qabla an tamutu, before you die. The first maut is tawbah. Do tawbah before you die. And inshallah we'll see some ayat of Quran where this issue of when will the tawbah be accepted, when it will not be accepted, we'll talk about it, what should be the timing. Whether you can just, you know, delay it. No, that doesn't help at all. And so we will discuss this further, but let me end with the statement that the tawbah literally means returning, but in Islamic terminology, it has a different meaning of returning. It's actually turning away from the chain of evil desires back to the light of soul. فَعَلَهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَاهَا. Allah has created this light in every human being, inspired every nafs with what is right and with what is wrong. And so tawbah means, you know, freeing ourselves from these shackles of the evil desires and following that light of our soul which Allah has given to us. Tawbah means moving away from the darkness of evil towards the brightness of good. It means moving away from disobedience to obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Let me end with one example from the sayings of Amir al-Mu'minin Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wa salam. When we look at this issue of tawbah and the importance, Sheikh Saduq in Ilal al-Shara'i', one of the books of hadith that he has, where he has compiled the hadith which talk about the rationale or the reasoning for some of the rulings and commandments of the Sharia. And he has put that in thematic or subject-wise form. There he has this hadith that somebody asked Amir al-Mu'mineen that when we do the prayers, most of the actions in the prayers are singular. The qiyam is by itself, ruku by itself, tashahud by itself, salam by itself. But whenever it comes to sajda, it is always two. Two sajdas together become the rukun in salat. And so this person asked the question of Amir al-Mu'minin, and he said, you know, why two sajdas? Ruku is one, everything is one, but in sajda is two. Amir al-Mu'minin very beautifully explained that in a symbolic sense. He says, when you go into the first sajda, this is a reminder that your origin is this earth. You know, you came from this earth. And this symbolism of sajda can only be meaningful if you do sajda on the turbat, not on the carpet. That's where we do realize one of the benefits of doing the sajda on the earth or the turba is that we are being reminded that we are from the earth. Then he says, when you get up from it, from the first sajda, he says, this is the symbol of your birth. When you go into the second sajda, Ali says, this is a realization or symbolism for your death. A time will come when you will be put back into the earth. And when you get up from the second sajda, he says, that is symbolism for the day of Qiyamah. You will be raised back to life. And so you have actually the summary of the whole, you know, process of origin, birth, death, and resurrection. If we do this amal every day with understanding. When I read this hadith first time, you know, I was really impressed with it, started thinking about it, and then something came out of this wisdom of Amir al-Mu'mineen. When I looked at the hadith, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, when you get up from the first sajda, this is your birth. When you get into the second sajda, that is symbol of your death. And I started thinking, in between that is my life. My life in this dunya is between the two sajdas. How long is it? How many seconds? But most importantly, what came to my mind was, what is the zikr we recite? Astaghfirullah Rabbi wa atubu ilayh. From that hadith of Amir al-Mu'mineen, a point of reflection which came out was that in the life of this dunya, we have to constantly work. We are not infallibles. We will make mistakes and therefore learn this formula of Astaghfirullah Rabbi wa atubu ilayh. Your salvation in the hereafter depends on that. But for that, we have to understand what is the reality of istighfar, what is the reality of tawbah.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi. كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف
محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
While Israelis protest against Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir's war on the judiciary, the High Court of the Zionist regime enables the occupying regime's use of torture against Palestinian prisoners. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye noted, before the current far-right government's war on the judiciary, there was a little covered news story out of the Zionist regime's Supreme Court. On December 29, 2022, the Zionist regime's High Court once again capitulated to the demands of the regime regarding the issue of prison conditions and the size of prison cells in particular. It granted the regime's request and extended, for the third time, the deadline for expanding the living space of detainees until December 31, 2027. In response to a petition by Israeli human rights organizations, including the Association for Civil Rights, ACRI, the Supreme Court issued an order in June 2017 to expand the living space of prisoners to 4.5 square meters, giving the Zionist regime's prison service an initial deadline of 9 months. In most Western countries, the size of standard prison cells ranges between 6 and 12 square meters, while in the occupied territories, it is less than 3 square meters. The ruling seemed to acknowledge the cruel, humiliating, and inhuman living conditions of the prisoners. In the opening statement of the decision, Judge Yitzhak Amit wrote that society is evaluated through its treatment of prisoners. He pointed out that depriving them of their freedom through imprisonment does not mean depriving them of their right to dignity, which stems from the prisoner's right to determine the minimum living space. However, despite this statement, the court approved maintaining these conditions for an additional 5 years, which then became 10 years from the initial judgment. In 2014, ACRI, Physicians for Human Rights, PHRI, and other groups petitioned the Zionist regime Supreme Court to address overcrowding in Israeli jails and prisons and compel the regime to immediately increase the living area of prisoners to a minimum 4.5 square meters as a temporary solution until it is raised even further as part of a long-term plan. The petition stated that prisoners are forced to spend hours of their day in bed without the ability to move or stand, and those sharing a cell are unable to stand or walk at the same time in the limited space. As a result, prisoners are often forced to carry out their entire daily routine in bed, including eating. It further argues that overcrowding creates suffocation in the cells, harms the health of the prisoners, and causes increased friction between them. It is far from the acceptable size in countries considered democratic and from the minimum adopted by international institutions to ensure reasonable, adequate living conditions that are mentioned in the 2012 report published by the International Committee of the Red Cross. Unfortunately, the situation in the Zionist regime's prisons has been the same for decades, but the regime has done nothing to offer solutions or make changes. In its 2019 to 2020 annual report, the Zionist regime's public defense warned of prison overcrowding and prisoner rights violations. The report described the existing prison conditions as a serious violation of human dignity. It criticized the narrow size of the prison cell at 2.5 square meters, asserting that it is too small for even one resident. The report reiterated earlier calls to immediately stop holding prisoners in these cells, maintaining that they are unfit for human beings. It further noted that the prison cell area today is less than half of the minimum approved by the Zionist regime's prison service, the main carceral authority, which specified 6 square meters as a reasonable amount of space. The public defense report further held that this matter not only affects the rights of detainees, but also violates the regime's obligation to refrain from cruel, inhumane, and degrading punishment, a basic standard of international law. On June 13, 2017, the Zionist regime Supreme Court ordered the regime to increase the minimum prison living area. To ease the implementation of these reforms, the High Court divided the process into two stages. The first would grant the regime 9 months to increase the living area for prisoners to 3 square meters, not including a toilet and shower. An additional 9 months from the court order to increase the living area further to 4.5 square meters would comprise the second stage. However, on March 5, 2018, a week before the deadline for stage one reforms expired, the regime submitted a request to the court to postpone the implementation for 10 years from the initial ruling to 2027. The regime argued that the compliance with the timeline established by the court would require a mass release of prisoners and endanger the public. The petitioners rejected these claims, arguing that the regime took no action to conduct new detention centers and restating the High Court's observation about the inadequate facilities, many of which were built during the British Mandate. It also opposed the suggestion of a public safety issue, calling these idle threats intended to intimidate the court. The court sharply criticized the regime's actions and initially rejected the regime's request. This compelled the regime to submit a plan to construct new wings for hundreds of security prisoners and an increase of administrative release that will result in the evacuation of about 1,000 places of confinement. In June 2018, the Zionist regime updated the court on its intent to use Saharonim prison in Negev Desert as an immigration detention center as part of the first stage of reform. As for the second stage of the ruling, guaranteeing a minimum living space of 4.5 square meters for each prisoner by December 2018, the regime failed to make any progress on this matter, leading human rights groups to demand that the court force it to adhere to the letter of its judgment. We'll be right back. In a notice issued on July 29, 2018, the Zionist regime informed the court of its plan to establish by the year 2026 new centers for housing prisoners interrogated by Shin Bet, the Zionist regime security service. It also announced its intent to petition the High Court to amend its judgment in order to exempt Shin Bet facilities from expanding the living space for prisoners until 2027. Currently, Shin Bet cell size is 2 square meters or less. The petitioners, representing various human rights groups, opposed the regime's request, arguing that this population should actually receive priority in the efforts to adapt prison conditions to the court's ruling, and that postponing the execution date of the ruling by at least 8 years is unreasonable.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3rd, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. The ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Office and Police Training. These riots had been planned. If the incident with the young girl had not taken place, they have found another excuse to create insecurity and riots in the country in the beginning of the month of May, September, this year. Well, how can you not see foreign hands at play? How can an attentive person not sense that there are other hands behind the scenes of these events? Other policies are at play. Of course, they falsely pretend that they care that someone has passed away in the world. They are lying. They are not upset by this. They are not upset by this at all. In fact, they're happy. They're happy because they have a pretext for creating unrest. They lie.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Here, the heads of the three powers of the state, executive, legislative, judicial, expressed their sorrow and sympathized with the grieving family. Then certain elements murder other people who are innocent and have not committed any crime. The judiciary promised to follow up on this to the end. This is what investigations are all about. It means following up on a case, seeing the results, and seeing if anyone was guilty of something or not. And if someone was guilty, identify them. How can you make false accusations and insult such a huge organization that serves the people over the probability that perhaps one or two people have made a mistake before any research or proof has been presented? There is no logic behind this. It is clearly the work of none other than the spy agencies and malicious foreign politicians. Now, what is the motive of these foreign governments? My perception is that they feel that the country is progressing toward achieving a comprehensive power, and they cannot tolerate this. They can feel this and see it. They can see that many old problems are fortunately being solved. Although the country has many problems, some of which started years ago, but serious work is being done to solve these problems and untie these knots.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.